Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD and iHeart. Thanks for coming back. This is Podcast 850B section. That means we have a great guest, and we do. Dr. Hauer is the ophthalmologist in chief of the Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, where she holds the William Tasman Endowed Chair. She's professor and chair. This is the most impressive CV, Dr. Hauer, that I think I've ever seen. So,
well, that's very nice of you to say. I'm
going to keep going on it. She is the chair of the Department of Ophthalmology at Jefferson University. She was educated at Bryn Mawr School in Baltimore, Princeton University, and Harvard Medical School. Only the latter is the weak link, obviously. After a Halsted surgical internship, which is the prestigious surgical internship at Johns Hopkins, she was a fellow in ocular pathology at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital. She completed a residency in one of the three most prestigious places for ophthalmology, the Wilmer Eye Institute at Hopkins. She received a Head Fellowship Award for her retinal training at Hopkins, and then became Wilmer's first female chief resident, showing how medicine has changed. We allow women to do eye work now. She was named the inaugural Katherine Graham Professor of Ophthalmology in 2002, the inaugural Robert Bond Welsh Professor of Ophthalmology in 2006, and she directed the Retinal Fellowship Program. She assumed the leadership of the Wills Eye Institute in Philadelphia in 2007. She was a Bryn Mawr valedictorian, a National Merit Scholar. Bachelor degree at Princeton was magna cum laude, and the equivalent of Phi Beta Kappa, or the prestigious graduation in medical school, is Alpha Omega Alpha, which she received at Harvard. She had the Rolex. I can go on. There are so many awards. It is unbelievable. But in any case, we're lucky enough to be able to talk to her about what diabetes does to the retina. Thanks for coming on, Dr. Hauer.
It's just a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Tell me, we've recently heard that diabetes can be made worse by sleep apnea. That is the diabetic effects on the eye. What are the diabetic effects on the eye, and do people with all forms of diabetes have to worry about this?
Yes, is the answer, briefly, to the last question. Diabetes affects the eye more than any other part of the body. The eye is the number one targeted organ, unfortunately, by the diabetic damages. And what they are, they damage blood vessels in the eye, particularly the small blood vessels, and they cause them to leak and become hyperpermeable, and eventually they cause them to drop out so that the tissues in the eye don't have enough blood supply. They become ischemic and the tissue itself dies out. Sleep apnea is a big problem for diabetic retinopathy as well. It's a major risk factor for diabetic macular edema, which is swelling in the central part of the retina and is the number one cause of blindness in working-aged Americans.
So let me just go and break some of it down. So one of the things you want to try and avoid is the diabetic retinopathy, which affects the retina and the central part of the retina, so you can't see well. And the worst part of that is this diabetic retinal edema. Is that correct?
It is largely correct. The worst and most blinding form of the disease is the proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which develops when you get so much dropout in your normal tiny blood vessels in the retina that you develop abnormal new blood vessels with hemorrhaging and scarring and retinal detachment. That is very serious disease. Slightly less serious, but still the number one cause of legal blindness in working-aged Americans is the leakage problem, where the blood vessels leak and the fluid and swelling accumulates in the macula, which is the center. It's like the bullseye when you're looking at someone. The part of their face that you're looking at is where the macula is in your retina, and that gets swollen from the damage to the blood vessels.
What causes the difference between just having diabetes, having diabetic eye disease, having diabetic, then the more severe, such as the edema and retinopathy? What causes it to go from just diabetes with an increase in blood sugar to diabetes with end organ damage, such as to the retina?
It's multifactorial. So one thing is time. The longer that you have the diabetes, the more the chance of diabetic retinopathy. By the time people have had diabetes for 20 years, for example, almost everybody has some degree of diabetic retinopathy. Now, you can make it worse by having poor blood sugar control. So people with higher blood sugars, higher hemoglobin A1Cs, you know, which is the number we now use to monitor blood sugars, they have a much higher risk not only of getting diabetic retinopathy, but of getting it sooner and getting a more severe form. Also, blood pressure is really important because, of course, that impacts on your blood vessels as well. So people with uncontrolled high blood pressure also are at much higher risk of severe damage to their eyes and severe visual loss. Cardiac risk factors, high cholesterol. If you have leakage of fluid in the eye and there's a lot of protein and cholesterol in it, it does more damage than serum that is not so laden with these high lipids. Smoking, very bad for blood vessels in general, just the kiss of death for the diabetic retina. So those are all those different health parameters have huge impact on the eye and particularly on the diabetic eye and on vision and anything that impacts on those. So too much salt causing your blood pressure to go up, you know, foods that impact negatively on your diabetic control, those all have ultimate consequences in terms of how you see.
Now, I want to get back to food, but before I do, when this happens, what is the symptom the patient will first see, and should they run to a doctor immediately, or do they have months before they see the physician if they get that symptom?
That is such a good question, and if we get nothing else out of this call, I hope it is a wake-up to people who are not aware that eye disease happens in diabetes and who are not aware that you need to have at least a yearly exam to make sure that you're not developing diabetic eye disease. You should not wait until your vision actually drops. Now, when the vision does drop, and by that I mean it's blurrier, you have trouble reading, lines may appear wavy, you can't focus to see the paper or see signs when you're driving, you may have trouble recognizing people's faces. That means there's something wrong with the macula, and the number one cause of that in diabetes is this macular edema swelling problem, and that is not an absolute emergency. You don't have to drop everything and go to the emergency room, but you should get in to see your ophthalmologist soon, you know, within the next few days to a week.
And what does the ophthalmologist, in addition to the exam, let's just say he sees this. I think my father had macular degeneration. I don't, probably wasn't diabetic at the time, but went in, I think, monthly for laser treatments. Is that still the standard, or are there other things?
No. So since your dad had his macular issues, and by the way, macular degeneration is the number one cause of blindness in people over the age of 60. So your dad was one of many But we used to do laser, and with diabetes, we used to rely only on laser, but there have been fabulous pharmacologic advances now. So we are able to not only control the swelling and the progressive proliferative response in diabetes, but we can actually roll back the clock, Dr. Roizen. It's very exciting because, you know, you think these changes are permanent. We always did. But now with some of these new drugs that we've got, we're actually seeing the appearance of the retinal blood vessels improve over time, as well as the leakage stopping and the abnormal bleeding dry up.
Now, before I get into that, I've got two simple questions that an internist, so I'm both an internist and anesthesiologist, and I practice mainly wellness medicine. And I often look at the, you look in the eyes with a fundoscope, and we actually take fundal pictures on most of our patients.
Great.
And we were always told to look for AV nicking as a sign, an early sign of blood pressure abnormalities, and we also use that as a guide to how hard we push patients who have what might be called white coat hypertension, that is high blood pressure just when they're seeing a physician. What causes the AV nicking?
The AV nicking is caused, you see it where an artery in the retina crosses the vein, and if the patient has vascular disease, arteriosclerotic disease, the type of disease that you typically get with high blood pressure, that artery will become tougher and less elastic, almost like a pipe, and it'll push on the vein in a way that it shouldn't normally in a normal elastic vessel, and you actually see the indentation of that hard arteriosclerotic artery indenting or nicking. It looks like a nick in the wall of the vein.
So that was a little inside baseball, if you will, or inside medicine conversation.
You're getting full marks in your ophthalmology credentials today.
So now let's go with a diabetic. So we have vastly improved drugs to treat this. Before I get to that, are there specific foods that people should take or avoid? Let's first do, are there foods that help this that we know of specifically?
Well, healthy diets in general are good for the retina. So foods that are heart healthy, things like lutein, zeaxanthin, you know, plenty of vitamins and minerals. Those things are all
so
good for the retina.
So lutein and zeaxanthin are things that we are colored pigments that usually come from corn, I think, or leafy green vegetables
that
protect the macula.
Kale is very in these days. Everybody's always eating kale. That's an extremely good source.
But now, are there anything else that's specific for the retina? I guess lutein and
the macular pigments are rich in those zeaxanthins and xanthines. So those are good for you. And indeed, anything, I really tell people, whatever is good for your heart is also good for your retina. So not eating too much in the way of, red meats, fish, oily fish, salmon, tuna, those are good. And then holding back on too much salt, you know, of course, that can make your blood pressure go up. So the types of things that are bad are the lipid-filled things that would raise your cholesterol, for example, fats, cream, butter, fatty substances in excess. All things in moderation, I would say. Excessive consumption of substances that are also bad for your heart are bad for your retina.
Now, talk to us about the new drugs that really changed the landscape from whatever it was 10 or 15 years ago when my father had lasers. They're new drugs now, and tell us how they work and what they are.
Well, there are two new categories of drugs since your dad's bout with eye disease. One is something that is are a category of drugs that block a substance called vascular endothelial growth factor. We abbreviate that VEGF, so we call these anti-VEGF drugs. And they are antibodies, or they block the receptor in the eye for this substance, which causes leakage from blood vessels and causes abnormal growth of new blood vessels, which can hemorrhage and be associated with scar tissue. And they're used in macular degeneration, too. So those types of drugs, and their names are Lucentis and Eylea and Avastin. Those are the three common names of the three drugs we've got in that category. Those have really transformed treatment. The other category is an old one, and that is steroids. Drugs like cortisone, Kenalog, they've been around for a long time, but we now have new formulations and new devices that we can put them in the eye with. So, for example, steroids there's a steroid known as fluocinolone that's in a new device called the Illuvian implant. And that slow releases a little bit of steroid to keep the eye dry and reverse diabetic retinopathy, and it lasts for 3 years. That just came, we're just starting to be using that these days, and that's revolutionized treatment for many people. You know, your dad went in every month, people were going in every month for injections. Now we've got a new slow-release implant that lasts month to month to month.
Now, so the Avastin is a monthly injection.
Yes.
But this new... I guess it's an implant that has a steroid with it, and it's called Illuvien. I have no idea how to spell that, so I'm going to ask you that.
Illuvien.
You only get it put in every, every 3 years. Is that what you said?
That's exactly right, yes.
And when you, now is it painful to put in? Is it bigger than an injection?
It's a tiny bit bigger than we put it in with a needle. It's a it's a very small gauge needle, and it's actually injected in the eye. It is a little larger than the needle, the really teeny needle that we use for Avastin or Lucentis injections. But it's not bad. We numb up the surface of the eye. The main risk of any injection is infection, so we have to prep the eye with some betadine to kill the bacteria. And then with the steroids, you also have a concern about some people will have glaucoma develop or elevation in the pressure. So we always test people before using the Illuvien implant to make sure that they're not going to have a pressure rise. And over time, it will also accelerate cataract development. So that's another risk of it. So it's not without you need to have a risk-benefit discussion when you're using it. But it's been... For the right patient, it's really been a fantastic boon.
Now, what percent of, this is a question we got from someone, I had tweeted that we were doing this interview, and someone tweeted back and said, what percent of diabetics, they said, I've had type 2 diabetes for 20 years, pretty well controlled. What percent of diabetics will eventually get diabetic retinopathy? I'm 55 now. If I live to be 80, will I automatically get it?
Well, it depends. The answer to that is it depends. Probably he's going to get some diabetic retinopathy, but it may be very mild if blood sugar control is good, blood pressure control is good, and other factors are favorable. Almost everybody, after they've had diabetes for 20 years, has some degree of diabetic retinopathy, even if they've got very good control. There are a few very genetically hardy people who are very resistant, and as you can imagine, that's the group of people that scientists are looking at to figure out what is it about their genetic makeup that makes them more resistant to the diabetes, and can we parlay that into a new treatment?
And while I'm at it, someone tweeted me, find out, if your dad had it, are you more likely to have it, even though it was macular degeneration and not diabetic macular degeneration?
Well, there are two different diseases that both impact on the macula, and that's one of the confusing things about a lot of medical terminology, you know, so both of them are macular diseases. One, however, is very different from the other. One is due to the diabetic damage, and the other, macular degeneration, is due to genetic defects that start to show up in people as they get into their 70s and 80s and impact on the eye. But in both cases, however, there can be inherited components. You know, diabetes does run in families. Macular degeneration does run in families. So if you've got a family member who had it or if your parents had it, then you do want to be extra sure that you get your yearly eye checkup, particularly as the years go by. And if you've got diabetes, you want to make 100% sure you're having a yearly eye checkup.
We've been talking with a superb expert, as you can tell. Dr. Haller is the chair of the Wills Eye Institute, ophthalmologist in chief is the formal name, where she holds the William Tasman Endowed Chair at Thomas Jefferson University. We've been talking about diabetic retinopathy, and my take-homes from this, and so Dr. Haller, correct me, I should make sure I get a lot of leafy green vegetables, if you will, corn, I guess, or lutein, substances with foods with lutein and zeaxanthin, make sure my blood pressure stays under control, that if I get diabetes, tight control of the glucose, that is, closer to normal glucose is better, and to see an ophthalmologist at least once a year if I do get diabetes, either type 1 or type 2. And did I get those points correct?
That's phenomenal. You're a very quick study, and we'd love to have you come visit Wills anytime.
Thank you. Be careful what you wish for. My son teaches or is a pediatric endocrinologist at CHOP, so we get to Philadelphia.
I know that group really well. We work very closely with them.
And he does manage children with diabetes, but I've never talked to him about diabetic retinopathy. And
well,
after
it's
I will probably
now.
Know more.
We're actually working with them on a telemedicine project, and I'm actually on staff at CHOP. It's a fabulous place, and that endocrinology department is number one in the country. Good for you. Good for your son.
In any case, we're privileged to have you. Dr. Haller is at Wills, and I'm going to come and visit her, whether by telemedicine or other. The product we talked about was Illuven, Illuven. And the drug we talked about was Avasta. Your diabetic retinopathy specialist will know about those, and you can ask them about them if you wish. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, a show that helps you live at the top of your curve by giving you the information so you can take control of your health. Thanks, Dr. Haller, and thank you for listening. Thank you.